Thank you for joining us for episode 26, part 2 of LDS Woman's Book Review Podcast, as we continue our interview with author Jessica Day George.
All the books that you've written, I mean, they are just so varied. It just amazes me.
They're all over.
I mean, this
is
exciting.
Such talent.
Yeah, it is talent.
I mean, those are really good ideas.
I just prefer being a reader because I can just imagine what the thousands of things that editors get every day look like, some of them. I won't say, since if we don't want to give away publishing secrets, not my publisher, though, but somebody was just telling me that their editor was saying that, and she's at quite a large publishing house, that, you know what the slush pile is? The slush pile is like if they don't know you and they didn't ask to see your manuscript, but you send it anyway, they put it in this slush pile, which... Some people are like, you mean the garbage can? But no, they keep them for a while, and what they do at their publisher is once a month, after hours, anyone who wants to stay, they get some pizzas, and they all sit and go through the slush pile, and they read the first page, and then if the first page grabs them, they'll read the second. But she said, in 10 years, they have not bought anything out of that slush pile.
Serious?
For one thing.
10 years?
And
wow.
For another thing, most of the people, like, if they read something aloud or, like, go onto another page, it's to make fun of it.
Great.
Which is why I'll never be published.
Also, advice to aspiring writers, decorating the first page of your manuscript with crayon or big puffy pink letters or sparkly marker really does not impress publishers.
Oh, my word.
Why would
someone do
that? It should never be pink and scented.
Why would someone do that? I mean, seriously.
If they're trying to stand out, you can understand trying to stand out.
It needs to look professional.
But it needs to be super professional, so... Glitter, you know, pink.
If I saw glitter, that would stop me right there. I wouldn't even read it.
People,
I hate glitter.
These people read all day long. Their eyes are tired. And if they get something that is, like, done in pink, you know,
just
like
bad.
They can't even see it. So, and I apparently that's really common. My jaw drops every time I hear something like that. And I just think they honestly thought if they did the title in big pink puffy letters with a crayon,
that
would really be the selling point there.
There are some books that I don't understand how they get published. And other ones I hear about that haven't been taken up that I don't understand.
And you wonder what is wrong. Why don't they see the greatness in this idea?
It's almost like
they're tired, they're ornery, they want to go home.
Well, and I think also doesn't it just take that one person who really likes that certain idea just to go, you know what, we're going
to
do that.
Well, you hear from a lot of people. Yeah.
Doesn't the editor have to like it and then they have to pitch it to the publishing house?
Yes, and then they still may not be able to publish it. They still may take it to their publishing house and they'll go, no, we already have like 3, you know, books about that planned, so why take this new one, you know, from an unknown author. And I actually know of a couple of authors, I won't say who they are. I know a couple of like middle grade young adult authors that pitched an idea to their publisher and the publisher was like, meh, you seem nice, try us again maybe. And then they said, well, wait, what about this, what about this, what about this? And the book that has actually been published, it was like the 5th thing down that they had an idea about, you know, so they like went through and were like, oh, you don't like, you know, you don't do vampires or whatever, then what about this book about unicorns or, you know, something?
Yeah.
And they just like went through until something sparked the publisher's interest. Uh-huh. And then they...
Well, they're lucky they were able to say,
If I had pitched... Maybe if I had pitched Sun and Moon to my editor, she would have been like, meh, pass, but she loves the book. But I pitched Dragon Slippers first, and it was exactly what she was kind of looking for, and she loved the beginning of it and stuff like that she had read. And so
you have the best beginning.
Oh,
yeah.
I know.
The hook.
Oh, totally.
You've got the
my
best
first
hook.
Paragraph just won the prize right there. And so yeah, now after this, everything I tell her, she goes, ooh, and, you know, wants to see it.
Also, at the Whitney Awards, you did the best reading, by the way. You really did.
I do read in a dramatic fashion.
You did a fabulous job.
But I'm so disappointed more people did not get my joke when I got up there.
I thought
I got up and I opened my book and I said, call me Ishmael, which
I got it.
Only 3 people in the room realized is the first line of Moby Dick.
And
Moby
they're laughing.
I know. Moby Dick.
I thought I would just get roars because I looked all serious and I opened my book and I looked down and I go, call me Ishmael. And I paused.
I smiled.
And there's like...
I didn't laugh, but I smiled.
And there's like...
blank stares.
chirp, 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 you know, and I just, I look down at the table right in front of me and they're all blinking at me going, yes, Ishmael, you know, like they thought that really was the first thing. I just,
you're going, no.
I'm like, never mind. No, anyway, moving right
going
along.
On. Yes.
Oh, I've read probably about the first paragraph of Moby Dick, and that's the only
you
reason.
Didn't have to read that that's in high school?
Funny. No.
No, I didn't either.
Really?
Then no. Read the last chapter.
It's
I alone lived to carry the tale, I think is the title of the last chapter.
I saw it on Between the Lions. Does that count for anything?
Yes, it does. Moby Dick is actually fairly exciting, except in the middle of the book, he takes several hundred pages to describe whaling techniques.
Which is the boring part.
Which is why I... didn't
so
ever
you just kind
get
of like
skim through blah, very blah, blah, quickly.
Okay, I went through a phase of I had to read every classic there was, and I made it literally like one paragraph to two paragraphs on each, on some, and that was one that I didn't get past the first page.
Really? What were some of the others?
Oh goodness! Holy cow!
I'm one of those. Peace. Oh, War and Peace.
I don't know many people.
I'm one of those weird people that really love Ethan Frome, so I'm always like,
really,
Ethan Frome.
No.
I love Ethan Frome.
No, I had a list I got off the internet that was just...
Was it from Doubleday Books?
I don't remember where
Doubleday
it was.
Doubleday Books came out with their top 100 books that they have published.
You had to read as well.
And they said that they think that most adults have only read four. And I went through probably. And I'd read
and
like 27.
And that were required in high school. They're like, yeah, basic. It's well, like, what would it be? Wuthering Heights.
Exactly.
To Kill a Mockingbird.
To Kill a Mockingbird.
You have to read that one. I love that one then. I was going to say, I love that one.
The Scarlet Letter. And then like...
I didn't like the Scarlet Letter.
Wuthering Heights or like Jane Eyre. One of the Bronte.
Yeah, it was
more Bronte. Brontes.
Count of Monte Cristo.
I love
Lord of the Rings was like number two, I think. And it was like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I got Hobbit Lord of the Rings beat.
So.
I love it.
I love them too.
I read all of them.
But it was, I will email that list to all of you. So
I would
you
love
can
to have it because
okay.
I'd love to know.
Because
it
was
very
interesting. It was an interesting
post it on your website.
Do you want me to? I will do
I
that.
Love
I like
stuff
that.
Like
I could do another
book. Until it fell apart. I cut out of the paper. It was the supposed to be the 100 greatest books.
I think that's
of, like American, but it was like the American.
No, the one I had was In the World or something, and I hadn't read hardly any of them.
Well, there are tons of different lists, and it kind of
oh, yeah.
so
many
put
lists.
It out. And this was one where they asked a bunch of librarians, and I think it was like the 100 greatest books of American literature or something like that. And I was trying to read through some of them, but
there was one I made all the way through, though. Pride and Prejudice, of course.
Of course,
that one's not hard to get all the way through, though.
Okay, now I just found Mr. Darcy's letter. Have you read that one yet?
Mr. Darcy.
Someone had said they were going to read. Did you see that?
That I marked it as a to read?
I don't want to read other people's sequels.
But, oh, it just sounded so good all from his perspective.
That's not a sequel.
Well, that's true.
That's not a sequel. What is?
Austin Land.
Oh, I loved Austin Land.
It's not even a spin-off.
It's
about a girl who's obsessed with Pride and Prejudice.
Exactly. I loved Austin Land.
Because there's, you know, Mr. Darcy's daughters and all these things where they've tried to, like, invent new characters. And I just think, no, I'm fine with the original.
Well, this one just intrigued me because it's all from his perspective. Everything that happened in Pride and Prejudice, supposedly it's all from his perspective. So that's why I'm curious. To read it, just because I thought.
You'll have to let us know.
Just, it's kind of like the Twilight thing, you know, reading everything from his perspective.
The original author wrote that.
Oh, I know. I know, that's true.
Yes, that does make a difference.
Jane Austen wrote.
She probably didn't think about it. Well, I will read it and let you guys know what I
think. Jane Austen wouldn't have known, because I don't think Jane Austen understood men at all.
I don't think she did either. She was a very unhappy woman when it came to men.
She was.
Well, have you seen Becoming Jane? Then you would know why.
Yes, I know.
So. And it's a true story.
Yeah.
So, but sad. She even had things later sad. In life. She had someone propose to her and her family asked her not to and just on and on. And I say, it's just ditch
sad.
Your family at that point.
Exactly.
Well,
exactly.
It makes sense that that's why she wrote Persuasion at the end of her life.
Yes. Oh, and don't you just love that one?
No.
Oh, really?
Actually, I do.
I didn't.
I
like
it.
The movie.
She
I
was
had
over
her
here going,
through
no.
The book.
And which
That's
movie though?
BBC.
The new one?
No.
The
Is there a new
one?
Kieran
Hines.
I don't remember.
The unattractive
just...
people.
Yes,
a new one.
They did a new
yes,
one with unattractive.
It was
people.
Harder for me to watch that because
See,
she just really wasn't.
If they are good looking, then it's easy to watch.
Said about Persuasion, the one with Kieran Hines that was done in like the 90s. She's like, isn't that so cute? They found some plain or some homely little British people to play this part or something about. Like, look at the cute little homely British people, which is so funny.
I didn't think that Captain Wentworth
That's
was
funny.
Homely. The blonde guy?
See, that's the new one.
That's
no.
New one?
That's okay, the new
wait,
one.
Okay, wait. What year was the new one made then?
The new one was I'll have to check out the new one. Just was on Masterpiece. And Captain Wentworth was quite the cutie. And the girl was not bad either. Yeah,
she's okay.
Did you love her dad? Anthony Stewart Head, Buffy the Vampire Slayer fans. Giles was in a Masterpiece Theater production of Persuasion as her dad.
He was awesome. He was the world's biggest snob.
Well, I am going to have to watch.
Maybe I'll have to watch that one because that was actually part of my problem with that
original. House in Bath.
See, that was the one we read.
You're not talking about the actual classic, though. You're talking about a movie.
I had a hard time getting into the book. That's why I went to
it for one of our podcasts, and that's the one I did.
I couldn't get through the book. So I went to the library and got the movie, and I just was like, oh.
I like how the movie kind of brings it all together, but I liked the book too, and I thought the letter from Captain Wentworth was quite nice.
Oh, yes.
I really liked that
one. I love Sense and Sensibility because I just don't think people appreciate all that's going on.
I like that. You know? I love that one. But
Emma. I knew you were going to say that, and I love Emma.
Drives me nuts.
I love it.
She's a nosy little.
I think she's adorable.
So much because that is actually the way that story should have been done. She is a nosy little snob who ends up
but kind of likable all the same time.
It's likable, but kind of dumb to be honest that she's doing these things and thinks she's so clever about it. You know? So
yeah, that is what makes it funny. Though.
Someone better. I'm sorry, but I think Mr. Knightley.
Maybe he does, but you know what? I just still love it.
Her friend, her supposed friend, and she's keeping her from the man she really loves. And
well, that's because she just wants something better for her.
Well, I guess it all worked out anyway. Okay, well, we're friends again. I mean, I don't know. There's just
you have homely English people, so there.
It's realistic.
What?
Shanda has homely English people.
Don't you think that's totally realistic that would really happen? That this girl be going around going, I'm so great. I'm going to set all my friends up. And then it didn't turn out. But oh well. So
I had that happen way too many times to me. Here, go out with this person. Go out with this person. I don't like any of my friends anymore. People they were setting me up with.
Okay, getting back to your books.
Oh, sure.
The
teasing people
one.
With the stuff
exactly
that has yet to be published.
Now I'm so thrilled to know that there's more in the Dragon Slippers series.
Yes,
but you have a new book that you just finished. It will be out.
Yes,
the knitting book that
the
I just
knitting
think is
book.
I love the story.
We should not call it the knitting book, lest we turn people away. Like,
exactly.
Ew.
Well, no, the thing is, I told my daughter about it, and she, of course, you know, Barbie movie came out, you know, the 12 Dancing Princesses, you know, the Barbie movie.
Yes.
So you've got a little audience right there with all these young girls that love that story anyhow. So tell us a little bit about it.
Mine's a bit different from Barbie's version.
Oh, darn.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, no kidding. I can just hear that trailer's on at the beginning of the Curious George movie that my son has watched 9,000 times, and I can now hear the music. So my version, which does not star Barbie, actually is called Princess of the Midnight Ball, and there is now the cover on my website, which is my favorite of all my covers now. It is the most fabulous thing. They actually found, I described the girl, the oldest of the princesses, to them, and they found...
Her name isn't Barbie, is it?
Her name is not Barbie. Her name is Rose. Oh. I described Rose. They found a teenage model, a 17-year-old girl, dressed her up in this amazing ball gown, took her picture, and she's in this gothic-looking castle, running down the stairs in her ball gown. Fabulous cover.
Oh,
so great.
I need to check that out.
Wow.
12 Dancing Princesses is one of my favorite
fairy tales. All my princesses are named
a flower name. Their father redid the garden at the palace for their mother, who is essentially, it's sort of an alternate Europe is where they are. It's like 19th century Europe, but it's alternate. They live in Westfalen, which would be Germany.
Right.
And when the mother came over to marry the king of Westfalen from Breton, she missed her garden back home. So he redid this whole garden. And so since the climate is so different, it takes this whole team of gardeners to keep this going. So they named all the 12 girls after different flowers.
I have a question.
Rose, Lily, and Lilac.
Do you have one named Amaryllis?
No.
Thank you.
But I did have one named Campanula. Because I always have inside jokes. People's names in like every one of my books, there's always somebody's name is from something. And in Wallace and Gromit, The Curse of the Were-Rabbit.
I love that show!
Lady Toddington's first name is Campanula.
It is?
And I just love it when Victor Crumb says, I can't help it, Campanula.
I need to watch that again. I love
so
that show.
Named Campanula, which both my editor and my sister... Yes. Not even Wensleydale. Both my sister and my editor separately said, this looks like some sort of disease. And so she became Compendula. Violet, but she used to be named Compendula.
Okay, so you have Rose, Violet, who else?
Rose, Lily, Jonquil, which is an inside hotel I stayed at one time. The bar in the hotel was the Jonquil Room, which I just thought was totally random.
It is pretty random.
The Jonquil Room. It's actually a flower that grows really well in the South, and we were in Massachusetts, which was another weird thing about that hotel.
That is weird.
But Jonquil.
I would never have known that.
Poppy and Daisy are twins.
I wondered about Daisy. I was wondering what
Poppy and Daisy, Petunia, Pansy, Violet, Lilac, Orchid. I don't know. I forgot. Orchid's I stopped cool. counting.
What is the youngest?
The youngest is Petunia.
It's Petunia.
That sounds like a youngest
little
name.
Little Petunia. And she still loves to dance, but all the others hate it because when I came up with the idea of doing this story, I was actually thinking about wanting to do a book that had knitting in it. And I was actually taught to knit by my grandfather. Because my grandmother was trying to show me and she wasn't really patient and she didn't know how to describe how to do certain things. So he also knit and he stepped
That's
in
amazing.
And
that
taught
is
me how
cool.
to, he learned from his boss.
That is, really? That is wild.
On, he worked for Chrysler for many years and would go on trips with like one of the CEOs and the guy would pull out his briefcase, pull out some yarn and knitting needles and knit like just a square. So
and
finally,
think of the time period they were alive, that probably was
in
the
50s, the 40s and 50s. Knitting actually traditionally was done by men.
Really?
Okay, yes. Now that is a fact. That
and
we,
there's, it's going to be knew. At the end of the book, a thing, knitting guilds did not allow women into them until about the 1800s.
That's Seriously? It was that is just amazing.
Knitting was considered too complicated for women. And in fact, actually in Navajo culture, and don't quote me on this because it's something I read in a book that was technically fiction. In Navajo culture, the men knit like the socks and the women chop firewood.
Really?
When they did those like Indian schools where they tried to like Americanize the Native Americans, I've heard that a lot of the students had a hard time with that. That they would send the boys out to chop wood for the cooking fires and teach the girls to knit, and it was really hard on them. So yes, knitting was traditionally a manly art, and so
that is fascinating.
Fingers. From doing all the knitting.
Actually, the calluses from the needles. I have knitting calluses.
Worse than chopping wood?
They would everyone had calluses back then.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever you chose to
But my grandpa's boss, he would knit these squares. When he got enough, he would sew them together into an afghan. So he taught my grandpa. So my grandpa always knit afghans, and he taught me to knit. And so I thought, a lot of times soldiers actually did back in the day have to, if they needed a new pair of socks
they
or a
scarf. Them or something.
If
or
once they wore them? Out, you would have to knit something. You can't darn things forever. So, you know, they learned True. To knit their own socks. And so I thought, wouldn't it be interesting to have like a guy knit in some book? And I thought of the 12 Dancing Princesses because in some versions of the story, he's an ex-soldier. And in some versions of the story, he's the gardener.
That's true.
So I thought, what Very if he true. Was an ex-soldier who got hired on to work in the gardens?
Oh, that's perfect.
You're talking about the one that...
This
the
is my
oldest.
Version. What?
Who's the he?
The he?
About? Like the main...
The guy. Died. The hero.
Hero. Not
He's
heroine.
A guy. So the guy the guy that wants to discover the secret... Sorry. The guy that wants to discover the secret of the 12 Dancing Princesses, some versions of the story, he's a soldier. Some he's a gardener.
The one I know he's a soldier, but that's... Yeah. I haven't heard any others, but then again, anyway.
And in some, he is kind of both, like, he used to be a soldier and now he's a gardener, so that's what I did. I had a kid who's been a soldier all his life, pretty much. They've been at war. He was like a boy soldier and comes home now that the war's over and gets a job in the palace gardens.
And he knits.
And originally there were like knitting patterns throughout, but it was really like stopping the story. Like you'd read a couple chapters and all of a sudden randomly there's like a scarf pattern. And so, most of the patterns are going to be available on my website and actually knitted prototypes and there will be pictures of like how That's to do this. So we talk about the stuff in the story. He talks about he's knitting his own socks or he's knitting himself a stocking cap. And then you can go to my website and see the pattern. But there's two like key patterns that like play huge roles, two things that he knits that have, shall we say, magical properties towards the end of the book. So those are actually at the end of the book. You can actually knit those two things.
Very good.
So, yes. But I just thought, too. Then I was thinking about 12 Dancing Princesses, and I'm like, well, like, you know, what a cute story. You have this soldier, and he follows these girls, and they go dance every night, la, la, la. And then I thought, you know, if you danced every night until your shoes wore out, what would your feet look like?
Oh,
you know, speaking of calluses,
so
if you've
painful.
Ever seen, like, a professional ballerina's
yes,
feet,
yes.
they are
awful.
Thrashed, or, like, the Riverdance guy, the original guy,
yeah.
one time on, like, Good Morning America pulled off his shoes, and it was appalling, you know?
Like,
missing toenails, and he was saying he had to soak his feet every night for a couple hours after a performance, and so I thought...
Is it worth it?
I thought that story was so random, too, in 12 Dancing Princesses. Maybe. They go, they dance, it's all fabulous, they're in this fabulous palace dancing, and then the soldier catches them and tells their dad, oh, I found out the secret. They're going blah, blah, blah. And they all go, okay. And they stop. It says in the original, in the, like, the Grimm's fairy tale,
right.
and they never danced again. And they lived happily ever after. And I thought, if it was really a fabulous palace and they were so excited to go there every night.
Right.
And then they never danced again and they lived happily ever
they
after.
They wouldn't be happy.
That just seemed weird. So I thought,
yeah,
imagine, why are they dancing every night? Why were they happy to stop? What would your feet look like, you know? What would that be like? And why, you know, and in the stories, it's almost like the girls are exactly the same age, you know? They've
That's
got
true.
12
Very
princesses
true.
Unless somebody had, like, 12 uplets or something like that, you know? And so I was just thinking, unless the old, if the oldest was only, was a marriageable age, which she is in the book,
mm-hmm.
or in the original story,
right,
and
right.
I think she, I'm so horrible. I write a book and then I go, I don't know. I think the girl's like somewhere between 15 and 19. Anyway, she was like 17 or so. So and she's the oldest. So the youngest is only, there's one set of twins. The youngest is 6 and has been dancing every night since she could walk.
Wow.
So,
her
she's
feet really messed
she's
up.
She's still into it because she's, you know, six. She dances
dance.
Around
they
anyway.
Do it. Yeah, exactly.
But the one that's a year older, Pansy is like, on the verge of nervous breakdown. This one little girl just can't take it anymore. You know, they're all kind of upset. And in some versions of the story, it says that the princes that come, they try and they fail to find out where they're going, are executed. Which seems a bit harsh.
Yeah.
Like,
okay, so?
And, you know, come and see if you can figure out where my daughters go at night. And if you find out, you can marry one of them and be the king. And if not, we're going to kill you.
That is very harsh.
That
is
harsh.
So, I don't like
that. A lot of princes die in this book, but none of them are executed by shall we say, human king. So, bom, bom, bom. I just kind of thought, you know, this story is really kind of weird and dark and a little bit scary. So,
yes, it is kind of
so
scary.
So my version's, well, not like scary,
a little bit
scary,
lighter.
But a little, no. Oh. My version's not. I thought, and you know what, at the same time I was writing this, now that you're saying this, I'm realizing that Curious George was playing on a continual basis in my home with that trailer on the beginning. And my son has to watch all the trailers. If my husband just starts a movie, no, Daddy, no.
I know. What is it about that?
Yeah.
My kids are the same way.
It's the, yes, it's the land first, the you know, way. First you have to see the 12 Dancing Princesses, then Land Before Time, then like Ice Age 2, you know.
What,
it's
Land Before Time are they on now, like 30,
I don't know. 14 or something like that.
My girls always like, just hit menu. They don't like the
menu. My girls are that way too. Mine don't like
to
see it like
and
to watch
knows.
It all either.
No, my
and
son's
knows
the
which
same
previews.
Way.
And sometimes after the movie's over, he wants to just watch the previews again.
That's part of the movie.
Oh, that would drive me to drinking.
He's 3.5 now. But, so I had that going in my head, the little, and the little dancing Barbies. And I was just thinking, you know, this story is rather sinister if you come right down to it. So my version's, it's a little bit sinister.
Serious.
That's
Ooh.
Very interesting writing.
No, it will be interesting.
And
when
I'm working,
does that come out?
That comes out in January. So there's the big tease, describe the whole book to you. And it comes out in January.
And then we have to wait till January.
Yeah, thanks a lot. And right now I'm 174 pages into a sequel where one of the girls, after swearing now that it was all over, she would never dance again, ends up having to fill in for Cinderella.
That is so cool. I
yeah, she's
love
never
it.
Gonna dance again. I am sorry, I am done. But then
that
in the original
fun.
Cinderella, she goes 3 times. There are 3 balls. She goes 3 times
really?
To the ball. She always has the glass slippers, but she has a different color dress. And one is in some versions, it's like one is sparkly like the stars, and one is white like the moon, and one is gold like the sun. Like she
Ooh.
Goes through these 3 dresses, and
I never
but she always
that.
Has glass
I know
slippers.
That
Yeah. So one of the nights she just Cinderella can't do it, and so
calls in a substitute.
Calls in a substitute who can dance all night.
So. Perfect substitute. That's funny. That is great.
So yeah, how but fun. I'm simultaneously working on that and the third dragon book.
You are a busy woman.
What are you going to do when the baby comes?
That's what I was just going to say. You better get this all
done. That's why I'm trying to get this done. I'm trying to get this done by October so I can take a break. But yeah, this third dragon book, which I joke that this, the last book in the trilogy that I was never going to write.
Exactly.
Dragon Slippers was going to be a standalone. When people started asking me for a sequel, I just looked at them blankly like, what?
There's no sequel.
I don't do sequels. I don't ever write sequels, ever. Ha ha.
Aren't you glad you did, though?
We're glad you did.
We love
Dragonflight. Is the hardest book I have ever written.
Okay, really? Why? Tell us why.
It is so hard. I had never written. I had written this. You know, I had written Sun and Moon,
right,
and had actually written Princess of the Midnight Ball before I wrote Dragonflight. So Dragonflight would be what, my eighth or ninth book,
right?
And none of my other books had ever been a sequel, had ever had any of the same characters as any of the others.
So there's where the hard part comes.
So I thought, I was writing this book and going, is this as funny as the first one? Is it too humorous? Is it not funny enough? You know, is Creel the same? Has she grown up just a little bit, but too much? Does she seem the same to you? You know, like driving my husband nuts, because at the time, I'm not even sure he had read Dragon Slippers. And he's like, I don't know what you're talking about, but I'm sure it's fine. You know, I was like pacing the floor going, and, you know, trying to make sure that the plot was different, but at the same time, it was something that would be similar to Dragon Slippers.
True.
Not like they have just slapped the same character names on some completely different story.
Exactly.
So I had to be like, okay, and is this consistent? And are the dragons the same? And, you know, scanning back through trying to remember who was what color. And
oh, see, that would be so hard.
And fortunately, there is a person at Bloomsbury whose job basically is to keep track of the colors of my dragons.
That's good.
I love
Seriously,
her so
that's
much.
Good.
My copy editor has a file on my dragons. I'm
well,
like,
especially
oh,
when
because
in here you go into so many more dragons.
Something horrible happened. Nivea is the wrong color.
Well, and people would pick it out.
It's not a mistake. It's a mistake in my brain. When I started writing Dragonflight and she became like a bigger character, I was envisioning her as being red and like sort of warlike and, you know. And it turns out the only time I ever mentioned what color she is in Dragon Slippers, I describe her as green. And it's probably when I was first writing that part where they call her the dragons in Dragon Slippers, I was probably thinking, oh, here's a dragon name.
The first
and
one that they rescued, Nivea. Is she the first one?
She is the second.
Oh, you mean like in Dragonflight?
In Dragon Slippers. Okay. No, in Dragon Slippers. Okay, she's the second one they call her. They call her Amakarin, who is Theoratus' friend. Right. And then they call her Nivea. And Nivea is the one that tells them, you didn't have to be this dramatic. If you had just told me that Shardus wanted this, I would have done it. You know, she's very... And in my head, I was picturing
she's
her as red.
As her own little brood.
Yes, she has. She has kids in Dragonflight.
She does.
And
little kids. I love that. That was
yeah,
so cute.
Yeah, I don't know why, but I was picturing her as red. But just the only time I ever wrote down what color she was, I put green, which is kind of like a default dragon color in my brain.
True.
Apparently,
true.
So when I wrote Dragonflight, I wrote kept describing her as being red and called her like, you know, they all kind of have a last name like Shardus the Gold. And
right.
I was calling her like Nivea Scarlet Scales or something like that, and the copy editor picked up on it. My editor didn't even pick up on it, and it's like, this is a green dragon. I had to go back through and like, and it seemed so wrong to me. I'm like,
no,
I was picturing her as red, so I made one of the other female dragons red. I'm like, you be red then. Somebody has to be red.
Oh.
But yeah, so it was so hard though, just making sure I was consistent, but not consistent to the point of like, here we go again, and the, you know,
and making it boring.
I wanted the story to be different. I love writing Velika.
I was going to say, I was totally curious about her and her story a little bit, and you just touched on it enough to keep me intrigued about, and I wasn't sure if I liked her even.
Really?
Yeah, at first
I wasn't sure
I liked her.
I felt about her either.
In Dragonflight, like she's a little bit.
Yeah, she's a little standoffish, and I understood
she's
was injured.
She's had a rough life.
I knew she was injured from the pool,
cave,
but
200.
Oh, 200 years in a
cave. And I just thought, you know, and then
cave. So, first forgot about
yeah,
her.
So she can't even stand sunlight and doesn't like to be touched by humans.
I got to like her, but, you know, about halfway through I hit that.
I just felt real sympathy for her.
You know who I really came out of that book liking?
Who?
Marta.
Yeah. I did too. When she jumps on all those dragons. Oh my gosh.
That was so
That was awesome.
I mean, there's just like little things here and there where she kind of started standing out a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, and kind of standing on her own. And
she grew.
Her obsession.
Her character
she
grew. Grew. I like that.
And that's what I was hoping for. And it was so hard to make sure I was doing it right. But I wanted the characters to be grown up. I mean, it's a year later and they are teenagers. Essentially, they needed to, they would have grown up anyway, but they've also been through a war.
Exactly.
And just,
that would change them,
you know,
them age a little
this
bit.
Very flighty yep. dressmaker's apprentice, Marta, who, you know, only thinks
she was
about
cute,
her hair and boys. And they've been through a war. She's engaged to an older man.
I loved him.
I'm supposed to gloss over that. My editor's like, don't ever tell anyone. But, you know, let's think about this. He's a retired bodyguard.
Seriously, he would be older. He wouldn't be 17.
Well, some people retire at 25.
He's retired young because, let's face it, how long of a life can a bodyguard have if they don't retire young?
That's but, true. You know, I just think
but he's not really.
He's not like 18 or something.
He's not 18.
He only
just was a gloss over that.
I just want to say that the fact that Creel is reluctantly the hero of the first Dragon War. And she doesn't like how they say that because what she thinks there's gonna, they think there's going to be a second Dragon War and a third Dragon
War. Yeah.
You know, she doesn't like when people say it. She's really kind of in, I don't know, like denial or something about it. She just doesn't want to be acknowledged that way. So I think the way she still was a big part, a huge part of this little battle that takes place in Dragonflight, and yet Marta gets to come up and kind of prove herself.
I like that.
I really liked how
she
just kind of stepped up there and was like, hey, yeah, I can do this too. And I mean, I love how Creel was like, Marta? Which is and she's like,
flinging herself.
Well, she doesn't want to be the hero, but then she's kind of like,
well,
I
she can
have
do
Marta
that.
Show me up.
Yeah. I thought that was weird. If Marta can do that, I can do that too.
That was a great
I love
scene.
That. I thought that was one of, I think that was one of my favorite scenes actually in the book.
That
I
really was
like
good.
That.
She doesn't want to be the hero, but she doesn't want
someone else to take over.
No, that was good.
It just, that part made me laugh when, you know, but I was like, wow.
Okay, now I don't know if you wanted it to be this way, but there's only one character that I really don't like. It's King Caxel.
Oh, I know.
It's like, you're
is
just
he a jerk.
You're just ornery and rotten,
just
you know?
Ornery and rotten.
He is. So is that what you
King
wanted
Caxel
us to do then?
Yeah.
Lucas,
the
and
prince's,
Milan,
the prince's
dad.
Father. Yeah. It's just like, you're just an ornery old booger, you know? He just is. I just.
Well, it seems like it got worse after she rejected his.
That he only felt compelled to do that to ask her because she had been
the hero.
Yes, the heroine. I mean,
he was just cashing in on her publicity basically
exactly.
in the first book, and she turned him down, and that would be he was just embarrassed.
Mm-hmm. So he doesn't like her.
Yeah, he doesn't.
And he doesn't like her relationship with Lucas. So I mean,
it makes him more susceptible to what's his face's, you know, like. One part that really made me mad was after everything that
in a
done,
good way like
sudden,
why
yeah.
did you do that or like I'm going along well, with the story and this part makes me
like
mad
this part makes me mad
I just
prayed to the dragons at the end after everything they did and all of a sudden they're like oh never mind you can't be here you know like
you're too much trouble
fight.
They're
and it's just kind of like well,
exiled there we go
well,
I was gonna say excommunicated
been here and you didn't even know. Now that you know, all of a sudden it's like,
they're not allowed here. Yeah.
Trouble.
Yeah, that's never happened in real history either, has it?
Yeah, never. No.
But it just is kind of like, you know, they come back and they're expecting this, all of a sudden they're getting shot at, you know?
Yeah.
Like, well, wait a minute.
I know that made me mad
just,
too.
Just,
I thought he was
just
a jerk.
Unfair, but, you know,
but
I
at the
I
same
like
time,
the dragons,
you can almost understand King Caxel's standpoint because the last three wars that they have had have involved dragons.
Right.
That's
well,
true.
That,
it would be like banning guns or something.
It.
Well, no, of course not. No, it made me angry too. I don't know why my brain, where my brain came up with that, but it was very angering.
Well, it was
but,
a story. I mean, you know, but I was just.
Yeah,
like,
but it is maddening.
Yeah. But I liked their little plan at the end.
Oh, I thought it was very clever.
Yeah. It was.
You know, one thing I really liked is that Finial gave his dog to the.
That was so cute.
Miles.
To Miles.
That
I
was
thought
so
that was
cute.
Cute.
I mean,
he gave him a
across each other in the woods, and he asked him
yes.
to take care of him.
Do you keep an eye on the dogs
see,
for
that
me?
That gave me like a little bit of promise, you know, like, a little bit of hope. I'm like, hey, they can...
For dragon-human relations.
Yeah.
making progress in dragon-human relations.
Once the dad dies, then maybe...
Miles would be a good... Miles would be a great king. We're not going to kill Caxel, though, in the third
I
one.
I was glad
no.
that...
No, darn.
He's, you know, high blood pressure. He's just headed towards a heart attack, but I'm not going to kill him.
He's too ornery to die.
Prince Miles. I liked the backstory of that, how you put that she came in. And
oh, the Countess. The Countess.
Yeah, that was
Isla.
Yeah.
I liked her, too.
I wasn't quite sure at first when they were doing her dress. I was like, oh, is she going to turn out to be one of those?
Like the again.
But you couldn't have had her be the same way as.
She did a good.
He had to be different. Just, she had she to was, be different.
I just thought. It would be so funny. Imagine if you were like known for your very, very plain looking wool clothing in your town, you know?
Ew. And then
you come and they're like, we'd like to outfit you with a whole new wardrobe. I'd be like, whee! Woo!
Yeah, no kidding.
Krill and Marta sure learned the value of tact.
Yes.
It really kind of sway her a little bit. She's making her own little suggestions. And
that was cute. Shot. I like how they did that.
I just hope she doesn't get too carried away in that, because it seemed like when she was dressed in her wool, she was a very practical and good woman. And I hope that being dressed in colors and finery.
Oh, she'll be fine. We actually are not in the third book. We're not going to see very much of some of the humans because we are going to go other places.
Woo! That's exciting.
Across a lot of seas.
That makes me excited.
To several islands. And other continents. And
that's good.
I really liked how it's Tobin. That's how you say his
name.
How he kind of stepped in as that ambassador. And
that was good.
I know. I like that.
And
that was good.
You know, their little marriage ritual is kind of.
That was. I her poor blue feet. I just felt so bad.
Like, let's get married outside, like at the North Pole, barefoot and shirtless.
I know. It's like, I felt bad for him.
My feet girl write to me the other day, like a little fan email. She is so darling, and she said that she and her friend love that wedding scene so much that they both agreed that when they get married, their husbands are going to be shirtless, and they're going to be barefoot, and they're going to get married outside. And I'm just like, okay,
oh, no, that's darling.
I'm like, are you going to cover them with weapons? And she's like, I don't know about that.
That's cute.
So I just thought that was like, yeah.
Well, that sounds very exciting about the third book.
So romantic. So.
I am just very excited about that.
Have you got a title for it? Have you thought of some? Has it been approved?
Don't know. And I have the worst time with titles. And Dragonflight was originally called Dragon Helm,
really?
Which, you know, for the helmet in it. And helm yeah. being ye fancy.
Do you really have the opportunity to choose the title? Because I've heard that a lot of times authors don't have that say.
If I really, really scream and pout.
Really? That's good for you.
Yeah. I can probably get my way. But
that's really good.
But most
we've
of the
heard.
Time I just agree with him because I'm like.
Makes sense, huh?
I don't know what to do. And the one, though, that was funny was Sun and Moon, Ice and Snow was my working title.
Right.
And I'm like, this title is really long and will probably need to be fixed. And they said, we agree. And we brainstormed about 10 different titles, like my editor and I.
Right.
We had about 10 different titles. And the marketing department, like the people when they were arranging the cover and stuff, the only one they liked was the working title. And so I'm like,
that is amazing.
Wait, I thought we were all agreed that that had to be changed. And they're like, no, it's great.
How so amazing is that?
I was like, okay, well.
Yeah, I like the title.
I think it's wonderful.
Oh, come on, no one can ever remember it. It's so long.
I do. I've remembered it since I read the book.
I like it. I like it because it's based on East of the Sun, West of the Moon, and it has kind of similar. So
exactly.
Sun and Moon, ice and snow.
I think it's wonderful.
So yeah, but Dragon Helm. A lot of people, when they first heard it, like you know, around my publisher and stuff, they all. Immediately, which I didn't think of because, you know, in my head I was associating it with this helmet. But if you just throw that title at someone, they think of Moby Dick. They think of, like, take the helm of
exactly,
the ship.
Exactly, exactly. Yes.
That's what you know, I and they're like, are they on boats? And so I thought, oh, shoot. So we played around with that forever, thinking of Dragon Blank. What can we put there? So that's what I'm doing for the third one right now. It might actually be titled Dragon Blank on my computer. Because I just, like, put in something and I don't know. I've had a couple of different ones.
Well, I think
Dragon Babies.
Was very appropriate because...
Yes. Yes. Dragon Babies.
Dragon Babies.
Dragon Wedding Romance Kissing Babies. Hey, that's a good working title. That's a little bit of everything.
What was somebody was saying they're going to write a book called Harry Potter and the Twilight Chocolates or something like that? Reel in the readers.
I love it.
Harry Potter and the Twilight Chocolates, and they added a Fable Havener. They added like all these things that they were joking about. My new book is going to be called. But yeah, so right now I was calling it Dragon Glass. And I have a friend that is like the only person I allow to read rough manuscripts because she's no holds barred. Let me tell you what is wrong with this book type of thing. And she's like, I don't know. I don't think I like that.
The title?
Yeah. That's what she said. So I'm like, yeah, well. It's more poetic than Dragon Blank.
Exactly. At least it's something there.
So yeah, we'll just have to pick something once I'm done.
Dragon Horde.
You know, that would be nice.
Except for, I don't know, that doesn't do it either.
It just Dragon puts Horde. World of Warcraft in my head is what it's that like, does.
Oh, really?
Maybe Dragon well, that's Treasure. A, well, Dragon...
That's all my husband and my well, see, cousin when you, and brother
the book is
like.
Very, very different. And so...
Good.
Without really knowing, good. It's hard to...
Yeah, exactly.
It's hard so to even offer
that's
suggestions.
The thing is, yeah. is I'm, once my editors read it and stuff, we're probably going to brainstorm on what would be the things. Because with Dragonflight, we thought about, like, dragon wings. Mm-hmm. We also briefly thought about dragon silk. Mm-hmm. But we thought that would really scare boys.
That's true.
It we had slippers, in. And then we had silk. And so
that'd be
But there is a Newbery Award winner from not that many years back that is called Dragon Wings. And but which is a wonderful book, by the way, Lawrence Yep, about Chinese American immigrants. Chinese immigrants to America, actually. They're not Chinese American yet. But yeah, so we were trying to find something that hadn't been done before, and Dragonflight's actually been done before, but as one word, so sorry, Anne McCaffrey fans.
I thought it was very perfect because once you get in there.
Yeah.
Into the book.
Also, know, a large I mean, group of dragons is called a flight of dragons. Like a gaggle of geese. It's a flight of dragons.
Which is perfect. So, that's why your cover is so perfect.
And so we have the cover and everything just
perfect.
Really came together with that one. So I'm hoping for book three we'll really come up with something stellar. That I can.
You will.
Because according to my friend that read it and is a... I won't say a harsh critic. She's a very exacting.
That's okay.
She really should be an editor. Anyway, she said that that is the best plot yet.
Ooh.
Of the three books, this is her all-time favorite.
That's exciting. Wow. That just gets me excited. So, it just does. It's just like,
that's not projection? To say she did not have an entire list of things that she wants fixed, but...
What's the projection on that one?
Of when it would be published?
Uh-huh.
We are going to be... showing it, I need to go back through and with my friend's notes and go over it. And I'm hoping to have that done by August, which means it will probably go to my editor in September. So it would probably be another year.
Wow.
So 2010. Does that sound awful?
It does.
Remember
it really
back
does.
When like 2001, A Space Odyssey came out and you're like, wow, that's so far in the future.
I know, and it's coming.
They have
and
now it's shoes 9 years to walk ago. On the moon, you know,
I know,
and now it's.
It's here almost.
Yeah, now it's like old.
Lately, you know,
when I think about it, and when you think about like when you got things lined up, like I'm gonna be having all these books come out, and then you're like, yeah, well, that one probably wouldn't be published until 2013, and you just think,
wow, I still be alive then.
Will the world still be here?
Yeah, no kidding.
Really, like, we won't be driving cars, I think.
Where it's going, we'll be walking.
We're not going to be riding bikes because nobody can afford the gas.
No, they're projecting that it will be 2013 before we recover from what we're going through right now.
Well,
I had a friend
know.
Tell me that the other day.
Great.
You've recover got to love what?
From this crisis financially that our country's going through, that it'll take at least 5 years to get us back out of the hole and back.
And that's barring anything else that might happen. But you know that Volkswagen... has something coming out in 2010. Limited net release of these like bullet-shaped cars get 235 miles per gallon.
What? That is nice.
Really?
And they're going to be priced between $35,000
and $45,000. Well,
oh, they all are.
Which isn't bad, if you think about it, for 235 miles a gallon.
Yeah.
Paying off your car pretty quick with all the money you save
That's
on gas.
True.
That's true.
That's
how
true.
How much it takes to do it.
So, I don't know. My husband keeps me informed on all that stuff. But
well, I thought my husband didn't. He doesn't know about that. I'll have to tell him. I thought you were going to say they're going to come out with a little rechargeable Beetle.
There you go.
There you go. That'd work.
That's what I want.
Get some good gas mileage out of those Beetles.
I'm waiting for the car from Back to the Future to come.
Yeah, there you
that
go.
The DeLorean. The trash. You just use your recycling.
Fusion.
Yeah, the banana peels.
No, somebody was pointing out something about that the other day, that is actually just powering the time machine portion. It is not powering the car.
Oh, no, that's someone who has way too much free time.
I know, somebody was just... joking about that's like, oh, where's my Mr. Fusion? And it's like, no, that was just powering the time machine. Notice that the car, and I'm just thinking.
Probably some science geek.
Oh, dear.
One of those things like when William Shatner yells, get a life, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I love it.
In episode 79, what's the combination on Captain Kirk's locker? And he's like, I don't know, I just spun the dial.
You know? Like, there was no combination.
I'm sure they were thinking the Mr. Fusion really was connected to the time machine, but that's not right. The engine of the 1982 DeLorean, you know?
I love it.
Exactly,
yep, you're thinking too much. Kidding. Okay, so when is your time travel book you're going to write? Are you going to write a time travel book?
No.
Oh, come on. I think you could do it.
No.
Well, I don't know that. Queen Arthur.
I mean,
Queen Immortal. I think that sounds pretty. That's probably as time travel-y as...
But she just lives.
It's like an interesting idea for that. Like, what if you could be sent back in time but not get forward? And so what they do is, like, kind of put your body in stasis. Like, what if archaeologists dug up a sarcophagus, like an Egyptian sarcophagus, and opened it, and the person was all like preserved, and then they realized that, and then they came, like popped up.
And they're like, hey, where's the bathroom?
Yeah. What year is it? You know, where's Dr. So-and-so that sent, you know, I thought that would be fun.
They go back, but then they have to wait through all
give them something.
I think that would be interesting.
Something, you won't know what the repercussions are for
exactly, or where anyone is, or if somebody messed with the your coffin in the 1500s. Then you could be in trouble. Dead in the future.
See, stuff like that's fascinating to me.
If Mr. Fusion fails, and I thought that would be a cool idea, but I'm not sure what to do with it.
So. I think it would be great.
That would be cool.
I know. See,
there's kind of like the idea.
You like we're opening that. You know, you're recording all this. We're gonna autopsy the mummy. You know, they're like in a sterile lab. They open it. And they're like, oh my gosh, it's all fresh looking. And you know, they
juicy
pull out. I love it. Ooh, they're so it's all juicy.
That's the mummy.
The mummy. She's like, oh, it's all juicy.
Juicy. They say it at the same time. Juicy.
That would be a great line.
And then it
pops
up, and she's like, I hate it when they do that.
She's not in the third one.
I know. I'm so bummed. It's brutal. Anyway, she had a brand new baby and did not want to take it to China.
Don't blame her.
Yeah. But yeah, I just thought, you know, what if it was like some leaves or something? Like you put these in your mouth and so, you know, and it will preserve you or something like that. And,
I think it's
you know, they're like autopsying this body they've found, and they like pull those out of the mouth with some forceps, and the girl sits up and is like, you know, and where's the bathroom? Exactly.
That's my first line to me.
You know, or imagine if there were supposed to be three of you and somebody's already robbed that grave and taken the one person, like who knows how many years ago, you lost one member of your archaeological
team. That sounds fascinating.
Like,
I think go Egyptian. That would be so fascinating.
You should.
That'd be awesome.
What do I do with that?
That's all I've got. That's it.
You know what? When you could
do it. That's a freebie for you.
Somebody can take that. No, you can't.
No, that's her idea. It's still her idea.
Sleepless nights, feeding the baby, rocking the baby, trying to get back to sleep. And you're
or my 3-year-old, as the case may be,
or your
sleepless boy.
In your half world of sleepiness, something will come to you.
That's actually how I wrote Dragon Slippers.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
I don't even know where I was or what was going on. I probably was in my pajamas. There it was. It was the easiest book I ever wrote was Dragon Slippers.
See, that's what makes me just so jealous.
It was effortless. It was effortless tiredness. Are you jealous because your kids sleep through the night? Is that why you're jealous?
And I'm fine with that. I'm just jealous of how easily
effortless writing is just
like all of a sudden someone
just
has a dream or somehow just gets this idea and they're like,
or sitting at swim lessons and just come up with an idea.
And it just comes up with this idea. And it's just like, I sit there and I try to just let thoughts come. And if I ever wrote a story, what would it be like? And the only thing I can think of is some sad, depressing memoir of my life.
Terrible.
Before I met my husband. Not now.
You know what? It makes me so jealous. You know, Stephanie Meyer dreamed.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what Twilight
is all famous.
Like a few years ago, I had a dream. Very weird, you know, and got up and in the night to go to the bathroom. Sorry, tiny bladder.
Can we say that on the podcast?
I don't know. I'm sure we've shared Shanda's tiny bladder.
For my tiny bladder.
Yeah, so went back to bed, fell asleep, and it continued. And so when I woke up in the morning, it was really vivid and weird, and I was like, and actually, the one guy in it was kind of basically a vampire, and so this was like years and years ago, like 10 years ago. And so I actually wrote it down as a short story. I'm like, this means something. This is inspired, since I kept having the same dream. Wrote it down, like sent it out to these magazines, you know, trying to get it published, and got back notes like, this is really weird, or like, this is kind of like an acid trip, or the one guy said, like, it's kind of too much like an acid trip or something for me, you know. Really got soundly rejected. And so then when I read about Stephanie Meyer, I'm like, oh, apparently I did not carry through with the dream the way it was supposed to, so it was sent to her.
And then she wrote nothing at all similar, actually, but
must not have sparkled.
He didn't sparkle. Oh, and there was ash falling everywhere, and it was very odd. But I'm just so disappointed that I wrote down my dream and no one wanted it. She wrote down hers and became a billionaire.
I don't know what happened. That's funny.
So Dragon Slippers was a waking dream. I was awake.
I really did enjoy standing up. I did enjoy both Dragon Slippers and Dragon Flies.
Yes, I did too.
They're my favorites. So I could not help but fall in love with that. Isbjørn. I mean, I really
It can be your favorite because you're not supposed to have favorites of children or probably books, but... So far, Sun and Moon, Ice and Snow is my baby. It really is. It's the book I've been meaning to write since I decided to be a writer. I was always going to write that story. So this, like, this is my. I can stop now. This is the culmination of my life.
I was really caught up in Hans Peter's.
Yes.
Oh, situation. What a tragic figure! I felt so bad for him.
She wished for him to be happy again, and
this
is how that all came about.
The last, and you don't think the last has one wish and wishes for someone else. And
he said she'd do anything for her family.
Can't do anything for her, and then she gets, you know, he tells her this beautiful name that you don't find out.
Yes,
time,
you know, honestly,
I really liked that name.
Did you like it?
Okay. I loved it too.
I was never going to reveal the name. The original version of this. I was not going to
really?
Say.
Oh, I'm so glad you did.
I was not
going to
say. You don't find out her name until the very end. Hillary is over here smiling politely. Right. You don't find out her name until the very end. And originally, I was not going to say it because
really
it's supposed
it
to be. Thank you.
I really was. Supposed
I just
to put
thought
it, in there.
It would be. If, what if it's not the most beautiful name you've ever heard? You know, it's supposed to be such a gorgeous name. And I thought, what if I come up with something and somebody's like, ew. You know, when you read older books, sometimes they're like, and beautiful Princess Edith or something. And you're thinking,
Edith, yeah.
Edith,
you know.
She says it was the most beautiful name she had ever heard.
So to her.
And so,
yes.
Her, especially for someone who loved
okay, what's her name?
Female names.
I really want to know.
No, you're going to have to read it.
No,
you have to,
have to wait.
But then also someone said to me, like, well, why is it Italian? And I said, well, I just made it up, and they're like, well, it's an Italian sounding name. And I'm like, I'm sorry, it's just the way it came out.
That's just
it,
the
I
name.
Spent like days
well,
pacing
you've
floor
heard
floor
about
what
the,
would,
you've heard about that guy that like a couple of years ago that tried to find the most beautiful name in the English language to name his daughter, and it ended up being diarrhea. Oh, you have got to be
I'm
kidding.
Not joking.
No.
What? You haven't heard that?
No.
Well, it might be a pretty word, but it's
diarrhea.
Definitely not.
It's definitely not a pretty thing.
You know,
not
that
is so cruel.
Did
he actually name
it?
And he
didn't
know
what
it meant.
If you didn't know what that meant, it would sound really cool.
It does sound, if you don't think of it in terms of what it means.
It has too many
Someone I worked with one time told me that their neighbor's daughter was named Dasani.
Like the water?
Like the water, because...
Dasani's kind of... Oh, that's kind of cool, actually. I don't know. Well,
and it was
can't
some
name
weird, it was some weird
now.
Thing where they were joking about, like, being so desperate for a baby name that you just, like, look around the room and, like, start yelling out stuff.
That's
and
how
his,
one
so,
of my people
so,
I know named
like,
their son Scott, because they were in the hospital and saw the Scott tissue in the bathroom.
Yeah.
You've got to be kidding.
Oh, no. Hey, son, you were named
my
after toilet paper.
My mom worked with someone who named her son, was going to name her son Bostitch because her stapler.
Bostitch?
That's like the only name she could come up with. And, you know, so
that's bad. So that's terrible.
His coworker was just joking, like, oh, if we just look around and, you know, grab, and he's just yelling things out and saw someone's bottle of water and said Dasani. And the guy loved it and did not know
realize.
Where he got that from. And they named her that. And then later he's like, did you know there's a brand of water and it's the same as my daughter's name? And the, you know, well, that's where
oh, no.
I got it from.
Poor
guy.
It's been a lot of fun talking
to you. It has.
We've gone over 2 hours.
Okay.
That's a good podcast. Well, that's a good one.
It is a cut off all our rambling tangents.
Like, some we never cut off our tangents.
Some I can squeeze out. Some of them I keep in.
Well, it's been great having you here with us for this discussion and be able to talk about your books and what you have in the works and everything that you've written that's kind of in the wings waiting for things to happen. And
I love to talk about books.
It's my books,
other people's books.
It's fun.
Well, that's why we do this. Well suited for this podcast.
Yes.
I mean, that's all we talk about.
Well, and you can come back anytime.
That's what we
I have that standing offer with our author friends.
We do, you know, we just say you can come back anytime. You know, you want to promote it. We just talk about it. We love to do it.
I want to come back in January when my next one comes out.
Love that. We would love to have you. That'd be fun.
Then when I win the Newbery Award.
I would be so thrilled. That would be so cool.
And hopefully we'll be seeing you at the next Whitney Award.
Oh, I'm sure.
You'd better see me at the next one.
I should
at least get to present or something. That was so fun.
Oh,
well,
you'll get
to be the official podcast of the Whitney Awards.
We were the only ones there. We were.
I know, but someone's going to come and try and steal our thunder. But we were there first, and we had a lot of fun. And I'm going to have a new.
I want to see another floral flannel board.
I told them they've got to do part two, but they'll both probably have books up this next year.
Oh, that's true. So they probably
can't present. The 13th Reality and Waterkeep. You know,
they can still present.
They can still present.
Yeah. I presented.
Yeah, they can.
I presented the award too, Michelle.
Was Shannon? Right. Didn't Shannon present something too? And she was up for.
Oh yeah, because she
they
presented all days.
I said if I win in every category, you're going to be seeing me all night long because they had me read from my book, they had me present an award, and then I was in three categories. I'm like, I'm going to be getting up every time someone.
It'll
gets
be the
up.
Jessica show.
It is the Jessica show.
You were up there more than anyone.
No, I can't wait to see what next year's going to bring. And
this will be fun.
You know, all the new qualified books. See what's up.
I know. I need to check.
Okay, you guys, you guys need to do what I've done. If you haven't yet. Nominate Sun and Moon, Ice and Snow, and Dragonflight at WhitneyAwards.com.
Yes.
I have done that too. It's very easy and pain-free. I mean, you just go on there, you type in the title of the book, the author, the publishing company, and your name, and send it off. And that's all you have to do to nominate a book. Yep. So
I'm keeping track of the ones I've read and the ones I've nominated, so I don't forget and be like, did I nominate that one?
It's okay.
Because by the end of the year, I'll be like, I can't remember. And I don't want to, you know, overdo
it. Terrible.
So, but anyways,
maybe I shouldn't nominate anything because I'll be like nominating it five times. Okay, we know.
But no, if you, what is it? They'd have to have at least five nominations to even put into the list of
to go to the 15 panels.
Or 12 that goes because they're doing the new panels this next year.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how that works
out. Did you hear
me? Which I'm on. I'm going to be one of the judges, apparently, for some category.
Which category?
I think it might be sci-fi and fantasy.
Really? Very good.
Yep.
That's interesting.
That is interesting. I'm not surprised, because that's your genre that you love. So.
Yes, so basically I won't be eligible in that genre, so they would
Well, they couldn't put you in YA. I mean,
they would put me in YA.
Yeah.
And novel of the year.
Yes.
Of course.
Come on. That's the one I really want to win. Novel of the year. Better than anything.
It's been so much fun podcasting with you and having you here with us. And we can't wait for you to come back and visit with us again after your new book comes out.
We'd love it.
The listeners haven't read Dragon Slippers, Dragon Flight, or Sun and Moon, Ice and Snow. These are definitely books we would highly
recommend.
And thank you for joining us for episode 26.
See you next time.
Thanks.
We'll see you next month.
Bye.
Oh, wait.
What? Hello.
Before we go,
we're back.
Don't forget, next month, James Dashner and Jay Scott Savage. Yep. Check the website. And if you haven't joined the mailing list, do so, because once you're on the mailing list, you'll be getting our emails and be up to date on all the stuff we send out. Visit us at LDSWomensBookReview.com. You can contact us at Hillary, Sheila, or Shanda at LDSWomensBookReview.com. And we'll see you next month.